Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It was about late November in Colorado, and I was about 7 or 8, and my father got the idea of taking us all for a weekend to a cabin that he was going to rent. My mother thought it was a great idea for me, my sister, and my father and my mother to bond. So that's exactly what happened. We rented a cabin for a few days. We took school off on Friday to get a head start getting there, which I absolutely had no issue with. We got there and it was sure cold. Well, it was almost December, so I guess it made sense that it was that cold. Anyways, we got all set up and decided where we would sleep. We ate dinner and then we got all set up for bed and we were just thinking about what we would do tomorrow. We got there kind of late, so we couldn't do much on the first day. That first night though, I heard noises outside. It sounded kind of like footsteps. I looked out the window and saw nothing, so I figured it must have been an animal. I just tried to get back to sleep, but about 15 minutes later I heard it again. I woke my sister up, which she was about 11 at the time, and she heard it as well. We both walked over to the window and saw something out there. We weren't quite sure what it was. We decided it'd be best for us to not see us, so we went back to sleep. I had a hard time sleeping that night and so did my sister. When we eventually woke up, my mother was inside making breakfast and my father was outside. I asked my mom if I could go outside with my dad and she told me sure, while my sister stayed inside and waited for my mother to finish breakfast. I walked outside and my father was talking to some man. A short, chubby man. He had a shaved head and was wearing a veteran cap. He looked really nervous too, for some reason. He was sweating a lot, even though it was freezing outside. I walked over to him and my father, and my dad looked at me and said, "Oh, this is my son," and told him my name. The man then looked at me and said, "Hey, nice to meet you, kid. My name's Patrick." He just smiled and looked at me. I also smiled and greeted him back, and maybe it was rude at the time, but I was just a kid, so I asked him, "You look kind of scared. Are you alright?" And he kind of coughed and replied with, "Oh yeah, I'm fine. I just went through shell shock, because I'm a veteran, as I couldn't tell already with the cap that he was wearing, but he seemed normal then." My father seemed to really like this guy for some reason, and I guess at first I liked him too. He told my father he had also rented a cabin with his family and that they were really close to us, so he decided to introduce himself. My father invited him inside for breakfast and he stayed and everything was normal. I went outside to play after that with my father and Patrick. While playing outside, I fell and scraped my knee and started crying. My dad was inside at the time, which was a bad time for him to be inside. My mother was calling for him and he ran inside while I was out there with Patrick. Patrick then ran over to me and told me to come with him to his cabin because he had band-aids. I agreed and I went with him. I wasn't a very smart kid. We talked about what I liked doing and I told him about the video games that I played and stuff like that. Then things got weird. He asked me what shoe size I was and how old I am. Didn't know my shoe size, so I told him that, but I told him my age. He just kind of chuckled and said something along the lines of, "Good to know." Also, his cabin was nowhere near ours. It was way back. At least 20 minutes to walk there. I was tired and there was no point in getting the band-aid anymore, but I still decided to keep going since I had walked too long. We entered the cabin and he told me to go in first, so I did. As soon as I walked in, I realized something. There was nobody in there. No family. I asked him where his family was and he didn't answer, pretending like he didn't hear me. He then locked the door. I was starting to feel frightened. He told me, "I'll be right back with the band-aid, kiddo." He then walked into the kitchen and pulled one out of somewhere, and then walked back and told me to have a seat and that he'd put it on. I sat down and he put it on me. He also held my leg with his other hand and rubbed up and down and told me, "You're rather muscular, kid. I like that." I kind of got scared and I immediately stood up. He asked me what was wrong, and I told him nothing and that my leg was feeling much better. I then said that I thought my parents would be worried sick about me and that I should hurry back, but he insisted that I stayed a little longer and ate there. I really didn't want to, but I was alone, and if I ran, I don't think I could find my way back to the cabin. The door was locked too, so I just agreed and decided to eat with him and get it over with fast. He asked me how much I weighed, and I guessed about 70 pounds. He then had a smile go across his face. He nodded and said, "Perfect weight." I asked him what that meant, and he just kept smiling at me. I was really weirded out when I asked him if I could go. He told me no and that things were just getting started and I shouldn't miss out on the fun. He had such a weird tone when he said that too. I then heard a big bang come from the bedroom. It was a closed door. Patrick stood up and looked kind of angry. He walked into the room and shut the door behind him, and I heard him yelling, "Did I tell you that you could move? No, stay where you are, I have company," or something like that. He then walked out with a smile on his face and shut the door slowly. "Sorry about that, that was just my wife. She's really sick and not allowed to be near visitors today." He was smiling while saying that also. I really wanted to go, and I looked around the room and noticed there were clothes everywhere. It was really messy. He must have been living out of here. That moment, his wife walked out of the room. "I'm hungry," she said. At this point, the man looked pissed. That's when he yelled, "Get back in there." His wife was extremely pale and looked like she had been crying a lot. She was sniffing and had red circles around her eyes. She looked at me, then walked back in the room. I asked him where his kids were, and he didn't answer. He told me that he had kids' clothes that he wanted me to try on, and that was the last straw for me. I had to get out of that situation, and I didn't know how. I started crying, and then he hugged me. He told me it'll be okay, that nothing is going to happen, and to just try on the clothes. He walked in the back room, and I thought this would be the perfect time for me to leave. I unlocked his door, and I tried to leave as quietly as I could. I didn't even care if I got lost anymore. I just didn't want to take any more chances with Patrick, if that was even his name. I had a feeling that he had been lying. I mean, he lied about having kids, so who knows what else. I was in the woods trying to find my way back. I was still close to his house, close enough to hear his shouting. I heard him yelling stuff to his wife. Things along the lines of, "Where the hell did he go? And I knew I shouldn't have left him alone. You probably let him leave." I could have sworn I heard him call her a few nasty names a couple times. Then it happened. I stopped in my tracks. I heard footsteps. I went and hid behind a tree and looked in his direction. And there he was, standing outside, and he seemed to be looking for me. I was far enough away to where I could barely see him, but I could tell he was looking for me. He then stepped out in the forest and I heard him shouting, "Hey kid, it's okay, you can come back now. You don't have to try on the clothes. And I have toys back in my cabin, all you have to do is come back." I then started running. I just ran as fast as I could in a straight line in hopes to find somebody in my family. I was running away and I thought I heard shouting, but I didn't stop to hear it. Then after about an hour of running, I finally saw a cabin. It was my cabin. I ran to it. My father was outside looking around for me. I ran up to him crying and told him Patrick wasn't a good guy and that he was really weird and how he was touching my legs and stuff. My father immediately called the person he rented the cabin from. My father looked at me and told me to never follow any stranger ever again. We immediately left that day and asked for a refund the next day. The guy renting them out apologized. The man that owned the cabin rentals called the police and they went back there and checked the cabin and there was nobody back there, not even his wife. His clothes and belongings were still there is what they told us, but nothing really happened after that. They asked questions and left, and they never called us or told us anything about him ever again. Patrick most likely wasn't his real name and he probably wasn't a veteran. I just want to know what happened to him and his wife and how he even got a wife in the first place. And how and why he lived back in that cabin. He seemed to have lived there for a while. I guess he left because he figured the police would be coming after him since he didn't rent the cabin. So many questions that will never get answered. My friend Lily has a cabin on a lake in Washington, and one summer she brought me and her cousin Evan. It had been a great couple of days, and on the last night, like we had the past few nights, we went fishing at the lake, which was only a 5-minute walk from her cabin. It was around 7 p.m., and fishing was perfect at that hour. To get to the beach, though, you had to walk through a small section of woods. There was a trail in the middle of that during the day was occupied by women jogging with strollers and kids running to another nearby beach. Our beach was a bit more secluded, and there was no trail to get there. The hill down was steep and slippery, and on the way back, it took climbing on all fours to get to the top. We stayed at that beach until about 8:30, just sitting in the dark relaxing. We were pretty good kids and mostly just sat on a log chatting. It was one of those weird situations where you suddenly look around and you realize that it has gotten dark. I told Lily and Evan that we should probably get home. They agreed and we packed up our gear. This was the latest that we had stayed out at the beach, so my overactive and scary movie-powered imagination, I was a little bit scared. We calmly and silently, for some reason, walked up the hill. I told him that it was pretty creepy here at night, and then Evan made it 10 times worse. He told us a story about these mountain men who had been around in the 60s and were basically these men who lived in the woods and were in some sort of cult. He said that they had murdered people all over the area for their cult and that some of them were still around. Internally, I was hysterical and terrified, but externally, I basically told Evan to shut up and to stop trying to scare us. As we started across the trail, Evan looked to our right for some reason. He stopped dead in his tracks and looked scared. Lily told him to stop being stupid, and the two of us started to climb the steepest part, the all-fours climbing part of the hill. Evan grabbed us both by the arm very forcefully and made us look where he was looking. At first, I couldn't see anything, and I just wanted to get home. But then my eyes adjusted, and I saw a large man. I'm assuming he was a man because of the shape, stumbling toward us pretty slowly. Who knows what his intentions were, but being kids, we freaked out and scrambled up the hill as fast as we could. We all turned around at some point and saw that the dude was running. Well, stumbling quicker toward us while we climbed. He got pretty close to us until we finally got over the hill and sprinted across the road to the cabin. At first, it sounds fairly innocent, but we all had a deep feeling of dread when we saw him on that trail. I didn't feel like he had good intentions. Once we got to the cabin, we threw our gear on the porch and ran to the front door, and of course it was locked. But there was a secret knock that her family had showed that the person at the door was a member of the family or a friend. It was a fairly complicated rhythm, and both Lily and Evan banged on the door to the family knock. I remember just looking around trying to see if the creep had followed us, but I saw nothing. We were let in, and in a panic we told the adults the whole story. He said it was probably just some guy who we probably made feel bad. We disagreed, but we felt safe in the locked cabin with the grown-ups. The cabin had a walkout basement, basically like a lower story. Not a creepy basement. It had a door and windows, where Lily and I slept on bunk beds. We went down to get into pajamas. After about 5 minutes of calming down together, we heard the family knock. I thought it was Evan trying to come in from the stairway door, so I said, "Come in." But no response. It happened again, but this time we realized where it was coming from. The window outside. Lily and I turned completely white and stared at each other with that horrible feeling of terror in your stomach. It happened again, but a little more frantically. We both ran to the stairway door and booked it up to the living room where Lily's family and Evan were. We told them all what we had heard through the panicked tears, and Evan went downstairs to listen. He said it was definitely the knock. While Lily's uncle, older brother, and older cousin all gathered flashlights to go look outside, we heard it again, but on the front door this time. Everyone looked at the door and huddled together. It happened once or twice more, and Lily's uncle finally decided to call the police. He said, "I'm not sure what their intentions are, but there is someone trying to get into my cabin," to the police. The knocking went on for another 2 minutes or so, and finally it stopped. 5 minutes after the call, the police showed up with a comforting loud pounding and "police" yelled through the door. To make sure, Lily's uncle looked outside a window and saw other police searching around for the creeper. The policeman asked us three kids what had happened in the woods, and we told him the whole thing. They never found anyone, but those banging knocks on the door will stick with me forever. The officer said that it was probably just some guy who was twisted and wanted to freak some kids out. But what creeped me out the most was the fact that the person had memorized a complicated family knock. All three of us slept on the floor together that night. I was 11 when this happened. Ariel, my older sister, was 14, and Belle, my younger sister, was 8. My dad was a freelance programmer when I was younger. He made great money on his jobs, but because he was so heavily in debt, at least 500 plus, and my mom was not the most gifted person on balancing a budget, we never had much free money available. This meant that we went on a vacation once every few years, and usually that was to a relative's house. My dad had just finished a long project for a big client, and we were celebrating the occasion with a new movie. Final Destination, because my dad loved watching scary stuff and scaring the daylights out of my sisters and me. We were in the middle of the movie when the phone rang. He went to get it and came back to grab Mom while we kept watching the movie. Belle took the opportunity to pause the film and take Duchess, our dog, captive because she was scared. They came back about 10 minutes later and announced that we were going to be spending the weekend in a cabin. We didn't know what to make of that, but apparently the client he had been helping owned a nice cabin by a lake in the mountains and had offered to let us lodge there this weekend for a considerably reduced price. It was Thursday, so Mom went into a panic frenzy of packing, so we didn't get to see the rest of the movie that night. After school the next day, we packed up the family van and headed to the mountains. It was a 2.5 hour drive, so it was late by the time we got there. We unloaded the van and we went exploring in the cabin. It was a ranch-style cabin with a little nook thing you could climb up to that was about head height. It was about 3 feet tall and probably meant for storage, but it was an excellent place for the three of us to hang in and play games. There were a few dozen board games up there, so we started playing once we decided on the rooms. Mom and Dad got the largest one, and Ariel claimed the smaller one with the twin bed, so Belle and I got the last room, which had a queen-size bed we could share. We had a window on the right side of the bed without a curtain, and a lamp on the left side of the bed. It was the only light source in the room, and there was a closet opposite the bed. It was locked, and we couldn't get in it for some reason. I never did find out what was in there. We went to bed at around 11 o'clock. Belle can be a kicker in her sleep, so I slept by the lamp in case she ended up knocking it over. I remember lying down, and I must have instantly fallen asleep, because the next thing I knew, Belle was gripping my arm and trying to burrow under me. She was squeaking something in fright, and I couldn't understand what was happening. I sat up and looked towards her, and saw something pale and human-shaped moving away from the window. My sleepy brain took several moments to process that, then I was shooting out of bed and dragging Belle with me. We rushed to our parents, who told us we were imagining things. Mom told us to go back to bed, and if we saw anything else, to let them know. I, much to my current annoyance, agreed with them and went back in the room with Belle. We switched positions because she refused to go back to bed by the window. I told her a story to get her to sleep, and I promptly knocked myself out after her. I didn't wake up until morning. The next day, we went exploring around the lake for about an hour before Dad decided we'd spend the day in the town. They had a lot of small shops, and my parents went to every one of them. We ate lunch and dinner in the town, and finally, we went back to the cabin. Ariel made a joke about something as we neared the cabin, and I remember everybody laughing before my dad suddenly held up his hand to make everyone stop. He took another step towards the cabin and then pushed the door open with a single finger. I thought it was strange that the door wasn't latched, but I didn't put the obvious together right away. "Dad?" Ariel shuffled nearer to Belle and me, but my dad gave his head a shake to let her know she needed to be quiet. He went into the cabin and disappeared inside for a minute or two while we stood on the porch. Mom called out his name and he called back that we could come inside. We did, and we found him standing in the middle of the living room with a frown. He locked the door once we were all inside and took Mom to the bedroom for a quick chat. Ariel, having caught on to what was happening, opted to distract Belle and me by suggesting another round of the board game that we had been playing the night before. We hadn't been playing for more than 5 minutes when Mom and Dad came back. Mom went about cleaning the dishes from breakfast while Dad joined our game. We played for a few hours and Dad told us we needed to go to bed. It was only 9 at that point, which made Ariel kind of mad. She was usually allowed to stay up until 10:30 on school nights and even later on weekends and vacation. Belle and I went on to bed while they argued. We climbed back into the same spots we slept in, with Belle by the window and me by the lamp. I read to her for a bit before we drifted off. I woke up to Dad rushing in our room. He scooped Belle out of the bed and grabbed my hand. He dragged me out of the room and into the hall, where I saw Ariel getting similar treatment by my mom. I became aware of a high-pitched whine in the living room, and I saw our dog sitting by the back door. She was bristled and seemed anxious. Dad didn't put Belle down and didn't let go of my hand. They rushed out of the house and into the van. Dad went back to get our dog, and then he burned rubber getting out of the cabin. He drove all the way back home without talking once. It took a half hour for Duchess to finally calm down. He told Ariel what happened the next day, but Belle and I didn't find out until years later. He'd woken up that night to what sounded like moaning outside the window in his room. He jumped up and looked to see what was going on, and he had found that the front door was unlocked. Stuff in the kitchen had been moved, and Duchess started to growl at the back door, which was ajar. He locked it and got us out of the house. He went back the next day to get our luggage and found several pairs of footprints outside Belle's in my window. This is a true story. Every time I tell it, it pulls the eyes of everyone in the room. So in the summer of 2020, my friends Alex and Violet and I decided to go on a mountain vacation. COVID cabin fever had hit us hard, and we were desperate to get out. We settled on a mountainous estate and planned to camp and hike at several different locations. For one night, we thought it would be fun to book a cabin in the woods. Violet's parents had rented a fire tower once and loved it, but a cabin beside a fire tower was all we could find. It was cheap, clean, and secluded. Excited to have a night where we could be as obnoxious as we wanted, we booked it. In the weeks leading up to the trip, we decided it would be a great idea to drop acid at the cabin. Violet brought an entire sheet in preparation for our arrival, and it was tucked in her bag as we pulled out of the driveway to make our way to the cabin. I remember the knot in the pit of my stomach, like this aching feeling that gnawed at me. I told Alex and Violet that there was no way we could drop acid this night. Violet was pretty angry. We turned around and got into a massive argument, but I stood my ground. I just knew that we had no business tripping that night. Finally, the fireworks settled and we were off. The cabin was roughly 30 minutes away from the nearest town. It sat atop a mountain. We held our breath as we rounded the busted road that spiraled towards the top. There were no pull-offs, no other campsites, just a long winding road that led us to the cabin at the peak. We settled in and started a fire to keep warm. As dusk gave way to night, we heard the unmistakable noise of an engine on the road. Then we saw the flash of headlights. A side-by-side with three kids arrived and our nerves settled. They smiled, gave us a wave, and climbed the fire tower and left. We had heard previously that there may be occasional visitors to the fire tower, but they were the only ones who'd come by. We doused the fire and moved inside. Eated some hot dogs until they were lukewarm, ate them fast, and we sat in silence. You don't know how quiet it is until you're in the middle of nowhere. You can hear every rustle of the leaves, the whisper of the wind through their branches. You get so used to the white noise, living in the city, because there's always the hum of an air conditioner or the dim roar of traffic to focus on. But here, the closest thing to white noise was the sound of your own breathing. We jumped at every noise, too frightened to speak to one another, and finally I had enough. I cracked a few wine coolers, passed them to Alex and Violet, and then I slapped a board game down on the table between our bunk beds. It didn't take long for us to loosen up, and we were laughing, finally having the fun time that we'd envisioned. Much soberer than we thought, but enough that we were able to ignore the rumble of the woods. Later, we'd recall hearing noises in the background, the snap of a twig, or the dim rumble of an engine. None of us really wanted to rupture the air of the nonchalance between us, so we ignored it. Until a human hand reached up to the window between us and slapped it like three times. We were all screaming in an instant, and Alex called 911, put them on speakerphone, and handed his cell to me. He grabbed pokers from the fireplace and passed them around, and Violet started calling family members and saying her last goodbyes. I held my breath and listened for any more noise. Whoever this was, or whatever this was, would have heard us call 911, and now they were being careful to make a silent retreat. Dispatch arrived about 20 minutes later, which was a lucky thing for a 1 a.m. emergency call, and had their dogs calm the mountain. Nothing, though. They suggested it may have been a bear, but I could tell from their faces that they didn't believe that for a second. We'd barely cooked those hot dogs, and why would a bear smack the window by a couple of screaming kids, rather than the one closest to the pan that we used to cook? And also, why would a bear knock on the window like a human? Why, when we screamed, did the bear make a stealthy retreat? They had no answers, but they had one anecdote. As they'd sped to us, they come across a car at the base of the mountain, but that was the only sign of life that they had seen. I remember my blood ran cold, but Viola and Alex were too frazzled to absorb the weight of what they had said, and dizzied by a new horror. Violet's car, thoroughly dusted by our drive up the mountain, was covered in handprints. Handprints that didn't match ours, that touched places that we hadn't. We grabbed all of our stuff by the armful and threw it inside, eager to remove every part of ourselves from this mountain. We followed the police, and we were grateful for every pothole that found us further and further from the wretched cabin. I couldn't sleep. The thought of that car on the road rang in my head. Remember, there was nothing else on that mountain. It was a narrow road to the top. No pull-offs, no other campsites. There was the fire tower. Maybe a visitor decided to spook us during their late night excursion. But the kids from earlier, we had seen their headlights. Whoever did this had stopped their vehicle further down the road and hiked the rest of the way, because they didn't want to be spotted. They wanted silence and secrecy. Whoever this was hadn't been looking for a cheap scare, because they had planned this. I don't think I'll ever know what the person on the mountain wanted from me, and I don't know if it was a practical joke or the beginning of a night terror. I'm grateful for Alex's quick wit in calling 911. I wonder if our visitor knew we had service, because it's certainly been a welcome surprise to us. A couple years ago, my friend Kate had asked me to go with her to a party. This party was being thrown by her friend Susan. So Kate had gone to a Catholic school with her in elementary and middle school, but during high school, Kate ended up going to a public school where she met me, while Susan went to a Catholic high school. The two had grown apart somewhat and hung out with different people, which is why Kate invited me along. It was Susan's birthday, and apparently Susan's parents had decided to rent out a cabin for her. They did this for the previous year, and unbeknownst to them, she had decided to throw a party. The party had been a hit last time, so she was planning on doing it again. Kate and I drove to the cabin together, and it was pretty isolated. Aside from the woods behind it, there wasn't anything around. We couldn't even see the other cabins, but I imagined they would probably be empty because it was winter time. At first, I was a little apprehensive because I wasn't going to know anyone at the party, but I figured after a few drinks, that wouldn't really bother me anymore. Also, if you watch scary movies, you know that having a party in a cabin in the woods is a horror movie cliche. I was very aware of that. Kate and I had even been joking about how attending this party sounded like a prelude to a horror film. As if that wasn't enough, this was a Catholic schoolgirl party. We arrive at the cabin and it is pitch black outside. We needed to use our phones just to find our way. We go inside and everything seems fine, and the birthday girl is having a great time, and there was a good amount of people. The odd thing is that there seems to be a strange sort of divide at the party. Kate and I were completely unaware of what was happening. I did happen to know this guy, though, who had the name of the city we lived in tattooed in a messy scrawl across his neck. Kate and I had been silently laughing about it, but we were also a little worried because we wondered if that meant he was in a gang or something. Anyways, I don't remember why, but the main group of the party wanted these people to leave. I think it had to do with them drinking a lot, despite not having brought any alcohol of their own. So in order to get these people to go, the main group said that a ranger, or whoever, was coming to stop by here, and that there was only supposed to be like two cars by the cabin, and a handful of people. Rumor was that one of the guys in the group was on probation and couldn't afford to get in trouble, so they left. The plan was a success. Or so we thought. Just as the group leaves, there were about four or five guys and one girl. The girl comes back in and says, "I just want to tell the birthday girl happy birthday," in a really loud voice, drawing everyone's attention. Everyone was staring at her in confusion. Like, why was she announcing this so awkwardly? When, not even 2 seconds later, we hear a window in one of the back rooms being busted open. This continues on and more windows are being broken and people are shouting and screaming. I'm just sitting there in confusion. Kate and I had been at this party for all of 15 minutes before all hell broke loose. And the girl who invited the group of hoodlums is now saying that she knows at least one of them has a gun. I don't know if my mind wasn't processing all of this correctly or what, but I'm just sitting there thinking, well, this is happening. The majority of us remained in the cabin. A couple of people went outside to see if the group was still there, and After a little bit of time had passed, people began to leave. There was still some fear that those guys might be out there waiting, but a lot of people just wanted to get out. I remember three girls who had been planning on staying the night had gathered all their stuff up with their arms full and began heading out the door. As soon as all three walk out, we hear screaming coming from the woods, and all three girls immediately turn around and walk right back in. In retrospect, it was kind of funny. One of the girls proceeds to start crying though. Luckily, the scream had only been that of a new girl arriving at the party. She had seen her friend outside and had screamed in excitement. Kate and I had stayed at the cabin for a couple more hours. We really didn't want to leave Susan alone, and the majority of people had left at this point. Aside from us, there were only a couple of people left in the cabin. Thankfully, those people were staying the night, so Kate and I were able to leave around 2 a.m. We had all debated calling the cops, but considering the underage drinking going on, no one really wanted to. Plus, Susan was worried about her parents finding out about the party, and had decided she was just going to lie about how the windows had been broken. Thankfully, the group of people, potential gangsters, did not return. While that night had been scary, all I can really focus on was the fact that this took place at a cabin in the middle of the woods, at a party thrown by Catholic schoolgirls.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.